Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, sponsored once again today by Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. Jim, just your average, typical, lazy Friday, low, slow news type of podcast. Not exactly. Not today. No, we've got some doozies today. And as you might expect, we're going to begin with the story that broke at about 9 o'clock, maybe a little bit after that, Eastern time on Thursday night. We got a little bit of a hint that Donald Trump was shifting his policy towards Syria based on his press conference with the King of Jordan earlier in the week. And we heard from him shortly after the news broke that 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles were fired off of two U.S. ships from the Mediterranean and struck, and apparently very successfully struck, the Sharat airfield in Syria. That is the facility that is believed to be the one used by Syria for launching the operation that released the chemical weapons that agonized so many different people. Speaking at Mar-a-Lago last night, Donald Trump making it pretty clear why he did this.
Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many, even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror.
And then he explained how this is not new from the Assad regime, but actually doing something about it is.
There can be no dispute that Syria used banned chemical weapons, violated its obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention, and ignored the urging of the UN Security Council. Years of previous attempts at changing Assad's behavior have all failed, and failed very dramatically.
And that's why, he says, he had to do something about it.
Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched. It is in this vital national security interest of the United States to prevent and deter the spread and use of deadly chemical weapons.
And so obviously a lot of reaction to this, and as we'll talk about in a moment, Jim, a lot of it not falling along the traditional lines when it comes to Donald Trump. ABC News giving a little bit of the backstory about why Trump seemed to switch his policy so quickly following the use of the chemical weapons in Syria this week.
Just 3 days ago, the president saying this is not our fight.
And as soon as he saw those pictures, as soon as he saw those images from that chemical attack, he wanted action. I think this is the single fastest punishing strike I have ever seen. Just a couple of days, he made his decision. I also have to say that Secretary Mattis, who was CENTCOM commander in 2013 when President Obama decided not to take action against Syria, this is something he was frustrated by in 2013. He's now the Secretary of Defense. They had plans in place, and they've gone ahead with cruise missiles from Navy ships in the Mediterranean.
So, Jim, we've still got some lingering questions. Where does everything go from here and so forth? But you say in the Jolt today that this was the type of thing that's been needed for a while.
People who've read the Jolt know I'm out next week. This is my last podcast for a little while. It's wonderful to end it on the note where we're able to say the world is a slightly better place today than it was yesterday. And the reason for that is this. Look, everything everyone has said about the messiness of the bloody civil war in Syria is absolutely accurate. It is very hard to find genuine good guys. People can argue about the Free Syrian Army. All of that is accurate. But having said that, a couple of years ago, we saw the first use of serious chemical weapons, probably since Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds in the 1990s. There is a big, giant taboo on using these weapons, and they came out of the lessons of World War I. And this was there for a reason. When we make fun of President Obama for his red line comment, The mockery is not that it shouldn't have been a red line. It's that he was unwilling to enforce the red line. President Obama was completely right. That basically we need to say, look, countries are going to have wars. Countries are going to have terrible wars. There's going to be massacres. You're going to see Rwanda, the Balkans. We live in a fallen and broken world in which bad things will happen. However, we do have the ability to unify and have retribution against those who do particularly heinous acts. And we have decreed, after these hard lessons of World War I, that poison gas, that chemical weapons count as this, also biological weapons, and also arguably nuclear weapons. Earlier in this podcast this week, I said, look, you know, you look back to the Persian Gulf War, America was sent a not so subtle signal to Saddam Hussein that if you use chemical weapons against our troops, we will nuke you, right? That's about as it's the biggest weapon in the U.S. arsenal. And the whole point of this is deterrence, right? That if you cross this red line, if you use this, you will get the entire world mad at you, and the consequences will be so bad that it's never worth it to use chemical weapons. 2013, Assad uses gas against his enemies, and there's not really any serious reaction. Yes, there's lots of denouncing statements and things like that, but there's not enough to make it not worthwhile. And since then, we've seen, depending on which group you listen to, dozens and dozens of chemical weapons. Sometimes it's chlorine gas, sometimes it's sarin, sometimes it's more serious. What we saw earlier this week that Trump describes, you know, when you spray a bug and you see them writhing around as they die, that's bug spray is basically chemical weapons on a smaller scale designed to kill bugs and not people, right? Imagine the equivalent of using bug spray on human beings, and you have an idea of what this is. America had to do something about this, and this strike seems to me perfectly proportional. No, it doesn't. It's not an attempt at regime change. This is not a land invasion. We are not taking over. We're just sending a signal to Assad. Each time you do this, you're going to get hit. So next time you have to put down a bunch of enemies, find something else. You got to use regular artillery, use regular artillery. The world's not going to respond that way. We recognize that war is going to be ugly, but this is where we're going to have this kind of response. This morning, there's been the wonderful news to see just about every U.S. traditional ally is applauding this and saying this is necessary, this was justified, this is the right thing to do. Greg, this is the kind of bombing that even Justin Trudeau is okay with. The Prime Minister of Canada.
Yes.
Germany, France, UK, Australia, Turkey, all of our traditional allies are fine with it. You know who doesn't like it, Greg? Russia and Iran. And any day the Russians and the Iranians are upset, that's another good day for America. I've been trying to figure out exactly. It's interesting you see that commentary about Mattis back in 2003. I think the simplest explanation for all this, Greg, is at some point, metaphorically, Mattis went to Assad with tears in his eyes and begged him. And Assad just wasn't willing to listen. People who remember the rest of the Mattis quote understand, here's what happens when you don't listen to, you know. He doesn't want to do this, but he's willing to do this if you know what with him.
Yes.
And unfortunately, Assad has you know what it with a lot of people.
That's true. He said, I'll kill you all. He killed a lot of aircraft and facility.
Apparently only six casualties. The Syrians, by the way, are claiming 4 children were killed. Greg, how many kids do you have in the middle of the night of a military airbase?
They're not there for a good reason.
In the middle of the hangar or something, you know.
Well, if they were there, which is dubious at this point, it's probably because they knew the missiles were coming and they wanted the story.
Yes, you know. I mean, further illustration of the evil of this regime. So, if anybody has had it coming in this world, it is Bashar Assad.
You talked about Justin Trudeau. Where this is falling along the normal lines is fascinating. The people who defended Trump for anything over the past 2 years are now absolutely fed up. You've got Paul, this is from the New York Times, Paul Joseph Watson, an editor at InfoWars, that means Alex Jones, said on Twitter that Trump was, quote, just another deep state neocon puppet. I'm officially off the Trump train. Richard Spencer, far-right activist and white nationalist who coined the term alt-right, said he condemned the attack and hinted at supporting another presidential candidate in 2020. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, who met with Assad in January and, oh, by the way, also criticized the missile strike as short-sighted and reckless. A little bit more to the mainstream, Laura Ingraham tweeting, missiles flying, Rubio's happy, McCain ecstatic, Hillary's on board, a complete policy change in 48 hours. Yet, if you went over to MSNBC last night, you pretty much got the reaction that you would have got if Hillary won the election last year. Brian Williams, who's getting grief for supplanting Rachel Maddow during breaking news, was saying, quote, "I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen, quote, 'I am guided by the beauty of our weapons, and they are beautiful pictures of fearsome armaments, making what is for them a brief flight over this airfield.'" So, Jim, if you thought you knew where everyone was going to land on this one, you were probably wrong.
There's a lesson here for me. There's a lesson here for all of us, right? Because what was one of my objections to Donald Trump during the primary? A lot of times he sounded like an isolationist. He sounded like a guy who was never going to get involved in these sorts of things. Admittedly, sometimes he wasn't always coherent. There was a lot of contradictory statements. But one day he's saying we got to stay out of the Middle East. The next day he'd say we got to take the oil. But what a wonderful turn of events it is, at least for where I am, where, you know, Barack Obama, who kept saying how terrible it was that Assad was using these weapons and we had to do something about it, never did. Donald Trump, the man who sounded like he didn't care, is the one who actually does something about it. The lesson for this for American voters is you always get the opposite of what you expect. George W. Bush planned on running on a humble foreign policy. Barack Obama said he was going to, you know, running to end two wars and end up deploying U.S. troops to five new countries. One of the other lessons is the pressures of the presidency tend to steer you in a particular direction, whether you like it or not. Reality does tend to invade the Oval Office. And I'll make one other last point. That statement about Trump changing his mind based on the pictures of the gassed kids. You know, look, we hit him a lot for being a narcissist, and I think deservedly so. But you know what? In this case, you know, Donald Trump is capable of empathy. He is capable of caring about somebody, kids far away. And I think sending a very clear message to a rogue regime. Look, you know, there are a lot of ramifications coming out of this, but one of the things that most people are in the know are saying is like, look, Russia denounced this, but they have to be spitting mad at Assad because there's no indication that he checked with them before he used the chemical weapons, that they had what they thought was a U.S. president who was largely aligned with their perspective in this region. You know, if Russia conspired to put Trump into the Oval Office, you think that's working out well for him, Greg?
Yeah, not quite the stooge that some would have him be at this point.
Which, oh, by the way, if you've spent the last 3 months insisting that he's the Siberian candidate and this is all a vast plot to help Putin take over the world, maybe not. Maybe you got to go back and rethink that theory maybe it's the irony is, you know, maybe Putin really thought he was getting a Siberian candidate, aka a Manchurian candidate, a brainwashed supporter in the Oval Office. And with Trump, it just didn't take.
Interesting column over at Free Beacon by Matthew Continetti about Obama's foreign policy straw man being blown up with this strike. The first President Obama's insistence that Assad's weapons of mass destruction were, in fact, gone. That obviously wasn't
nice
true.
Nice job, John Kerry. At one point, he said it was 100% of his weapons were taken. And PolitiFact, that fine institution, came out and said it was mostly true.
Mostly true.
He says another way of saying totally false.
The second casualty of the strike was the absurd Obama line that the only alternatives available to a president are inaction or a massive ground invasion and occupation. And the final straw man was that when President Obama punted on Syria in 2013, he claimed there was no international support for limited intervention. What he really meant was that Russia and Iran didn't want it, and Obama was willing to sacrifice that for the sake of the Iran nuclear deal. So lot to see what will happen here. How will the Russians react? How will the Syrians, the Iranians react? Will this be limited and isolated like the Libyan attack from 1986 when we nailed Gaddafi? We'll see. But a lot to chew on here going forward. Let's move to the next martini, definitely the bad martini. Just as one radical Muslim is being dealt with, let's talk about a different one, one with far less power. But when it comes to five people in Stockholm today, that didn't make much of a difference. This is the UK Daily Mail. Up to five people are believed to have been killed in a terrorist attack when a stolen truck rammed into shoppers in Stockholm before running through the city center, shooting at and stabbing pedestrians. Three men were reported to have jumped out of the truck and opened fire. Police said the vehicle crashed into a group of people on the street outside a shopping center after racing down six streets. Hundreds of shoppers were seen fleeing for their lives after the articulated truck rammed into the corner of the building. Dozens were believed to have been injured. The driver was said by witnesses to be wearing a balaclava. Two suspects are thought to have been arrested as well. So, Jim, this seems to be a more and more common tactic by terrorists. We saw it in Nice. We saw it in London. I'm sure we've seen it other places that aren't coming to mind right now. Now Sweden, and this will obviously bring up a lot of conversation about how many refugees a country's ought to take, is the scene of this latest carnage.
The most striking about the events of the morning Greg, is that as soon as you hear about a truck running into people in a major European capital, you just have like that's not an accident.
Right.
It's always possible that, yes, there could be a vehicular accident, that someone could lose control of a truck, but it did not take terribly long for they heard there were shots fired and it was fairly clear, no, this is just another terror attack and the ugly kind that we have seen in France and lots of other countries. You think gun control is tough to enact? Try enacting truck control. You know, double check somebody for a driver's license. I mean, apparently this was stolen, meaning that this is probably the good news is they have the terrorists, assuming this is an Islamist, assuming this is either an Al-Qaeda or an ISIS sympathizer or a lone wolf type, that basically their whole motivation is I'm going to try to kill people any way I can. And if it's not this, I will get a meat cleaver. If it's not this, I will get, I can't build a bomb. They're going to try to find ways to kill people no matter what. The only thing you can really do in a situation like this is build up those kind of, natural stone barriers that they have outside several, big buildings, federal office buildings, things like that. Kind of an eyesore, but sometimes necessary to stop somebody from trying to ram through like that. The other thing I noticed this morning, Greg, did you see a lot of headlines around there, like truck runs into building and kills people?
Those darn trucks.
I was about to say, I know we've talked a great deal about the radicalization of trucks, the idea of the truck imam spreading radical Islam amongst the truck followers. But I just have this feeling there's somebody behind the wheel who's doing it. As in, it's not really the inanimate object. It wasn't a transformer, guys. It was an actual person who did this, and it doesn't do us much good to try to dance around that.
No, not at all. And another one has come to mind: Berlin. We talked about Berlin a lot right around Christmas time. Jim, let's talk about Simply Safe home security. You know who didn't have Simply Safe? The Syrians at Shayrat Airfield last night. Otherwise, they would have seen this coming. Maybe.
Well, Simply Safe is a fantastic product. I'm not sure they can stop a tomahawk. I think. Check your warranty. Check
take care of that. Tomahawk cruise missiles not covered, apparently. But Simply Safe, when it comes to actual home security, is top of the line. When you order your Simply Safe home security system online, you're taking the first easy step to protecting your home and family. With entry sensors, motion sensors, glass break sensors, soon you'll make your home a burglar's worst nightmare. And the best part is you can set it all up in less than an hour.
Simply Safe comes pre-programmed to work out of the box. Just plug in the base station and it will talk you through the entire process. Even someone who isn't the slightest bit handy, like anybody maybe producing this podcast, anyone like that can install it. The entire system is wireless, so there's no need to drill holes in your walls or do anything else that will cause permanent damage. And once you're all set up, Simply Safe makes it just as easy to stay protected month to month. There are no long-term contracts and no hidden fees. Just $14.99 a month for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, professional monitoring and emergency dispatch service.
So don't wait another day to take your home safety into your own hands. Get Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get 10% off your home security system. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Go now, simplysafe.com/ricochet. And Jim, let's get back to the White House Game of Thrones, as you termed it yesterday. And I've seen a couple other people now pick up on that verbiage as well. We talked about Steve Bannon being removed from the National Security Council. And then there was the rumors back and forth that he had threatened to quit from his position as chief strategist. He says that's not the case. But here's what Mike Allen is reporting over at Axios. President Trump is considering a broad shakeup of his White House that could include the replacement of White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus and the departure of chief strategist Steve Bannon, aides and advisors tell us. A top aide to Trump says he's contemplating major changes, but that the situation is very fluid and the timing uncertain. Quote, things are happening, but it's very unclear the president's willing to pull that trigger. Insiders tell me, that's Mike Allen, that the possibilities for chief of staff include House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who developed a bond with Trump as one of the earlier congressional leaders to support him and remains a confidant, Wayne Berman of Blackstone Group, a Washington heavy hitter who was Assistant Secretary of Commerce under President George H.W. Bush, David Urban of the Washington advisory firm American Continental Group, and a former chief of staff to the late Arlen Specter. Boy, the anti-establishment vibe in this White House is going away pretty fast. The other one here that could very well be the choice, actually, if there is a shakeup, Gary Cohn, Trump's economic advisor and the former number two at Goldman Sachs, who has built a formidable team and internal clout. So Jim, again, considerations. There were some reports yesterday that Bannon has clashed and had criticisms of Jared Kushner. It's probably not going to sit that great with the president. But what do you make of all this potential card shuffling just 100 days in here or less?
Okay, Greg, do you think a White House team is kind of like an NFL football team's offensive line?
It should be.
Because the thinking is in coaching circles of the NFL, but the more an offensive line plays together, the better they get. It takes a while for guys to kind of get used to each other, to kind of figure out the rhythms and idiosyncrasies and how to work best together to make sure they block all the guys they're supposed to block. Most of the teams that have really good offensive lines don't have a lot of rookies or a lot of churn and guys being substituted out for injuries and things like that. It's generally you got five guys who are used to playing together. I don't know. We've talked in past podcasts about this. Seems like this game, as I said, Game of Thrones or Abraham Lincoln's team of rivals between Steve Bannon, Reince Priebus, Mike Pence, who obviously isn't going anywhere, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner. You can throw in Kellyanne Conway, maybe even Spicer. Gary Cohn, as you mentioned, is apparently getting more and more influential. You've got six or seven really high-level, important advisors to the president, each one kind of jockeying for position, each one trying to make sure that they're the ones who get to speak to the president last and have the most influence on the president instead of the other guy. There's a report in either Politico or Axios that Kushner and Bannon this week had some sort of, you know, very vehement argument. And Bannon said, look, the real problem is you're a Democrat. As Oliver did put it, yeah, but, you know, so is Trump. or at least he used to be. Look, I'm fairly certain that the worldview of Steve Bannon, let's throw in Mike Pence. I think probably Reince Priebus is probably more or less in line with the worldview of Mike Pence. And then you've got Ivanka and Jared. Look, you know, that Venn diagram doesn't overlap all that much. It's not surprising that you're going to see very serious divisions among this. And it's kind of up to the president to have – it's great to have a diverse range of views and make sure you're hearing from everybody. And you don't have, you know, this kind of ideological lockstep. But at some point, you got to get everybody pulling their oars in the same direction. Maybe replacing – actually, I could see replacing one of these folks. The idea of all of a sudden, you know, we had figured that Bannon versus Priebus was going to be the great tug of war defining the first term of this presidency. Greg, if this report is true, you might lose both of them before 100 days? Really? It's, you know, it feels like a lot of churn, and I don't know if that necessarily will make things better or stabilize them. It's kind of curious, shall we say. I think that they I want to see more stability. I want to see this team working better together. Maybe you got to make a change like that. I don't know. I'd be very surprised if you replace either one of them. It would just kind of add to the narrative of, you know, White House and disarray. If you're going to replace these guys, boy, I hope you know what you're doing. And it's not just, you know, another 3 months down the road. On the other hand, Greg, I'm realizing this is the first guy who ran for president and succeed who had, I think, three campaign managers like in a 9 month span.
Could be. Yeah, he's tireless. Maybe he likes to go through people till he finds exactly who works well with him. There was a lot of churn, I remember, in the very early days of the Clinton administration, but I'm not sure the early days of the Clinton administration are what you want to emulate the first two years.
But mostly amongst attorney generals.
Oh, man. But, Jim, we got great news to end the week. Congratulations, Justice Gorsuch. Neil Gorsuch, Supreme Court Justice.
Arguably, this is the best week Trump has had in his presidency. And for a lot of folks who were holding their nose when they voted for him, a lot of folks who were not certain they liked it, not certain that that this was the right guy, looks like they are vindicated, at least in this area, that we have at least one good Supreme Court justice replacing the late Antonin Scalia. And now everybody's attention, you know, everyone applauds him, congratulates him, can't wait to see some 5-4 decisions coming down the pike. And of course, everyone then turns their attention. How you feeling, Justice Ginsburg?
Or Kennedy or Breyer.
No one cough on her.
Oh, man. Jim, have a great spring break. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you on the 17th.
I'll see you in about a week, Greg. Thanks so much.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/ricochet, and tune in again next week for the next 3 Martini Lunch.